AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
I've been listening to It Takes What It Takes.
Oh.
That's great.
Yes.
I'm obsessed. I've been listening to it nonstop.
A bunch of quotes in
the I know you do. Well, some of them I wrote them down. I was like, I think I've heard that before. I think I've heard that one before. Anyway, we can talk about that at a later date. But today we're going to talk about...
Hi, I'm Jim. Welcome to the Unbound Performance Podcast, where we explore the world of sports and performance mindset training.
And I'm Caroline. Each week, we talk about the strategies, habits, and mental framework that help us to excel. Let's get into today's episode.
This article from The Athletic again.
Yes.
Titled, Michael Phelps, Jay Glazer, Bonded Over Mental Health. It became a star-studded support system.
Yeah, I read that. And Jay Glazer had a book come out 2 years ago, Unbreakable, where he was very open and candid about everything he's going through. And, you know, we don't know these people other than, you know, what we see on TV or whatever. And so he always came across as, you know, pretty together and sturdy, and just goes to show that that's just not even a fraction of what someone's life really is. And never mind, I thought you have all these, I mean, everyone from, you know, NFL head coaches to retired NFL players, retired UFC champ Mark Kerr, who's like, his nickname was the Smashing Machine. There's a movie coming out with The Rock playing him, coming out really soon. I mean, he was a beast. I mean, I remember him. And yet they all struggled with this stuff.
Deeply.
And yeah, like, I mean, like really struggled.
Bad, yeah.
And so, I mean, I think there's a couple takeaways. One, it's pretty powerful that they were all willing to open up.
Yeah, and just, I guess for context, they have this group chat.
Yeah.
Amongst, I don't remember how many guys is ever in there, and then I think they opened it up, but I thought they said how many people were in there.
Well, at one point when Dan Quinn, who had been fired as head coach of the Falcons, he's now the head coach of the Washington football team. They set up something where they had 50 of his former players. It was kind of like a surprise because Jay Glazer did that. Had on a Zoom call, and you know, just showing like, one, you're not out there all by yourself, and people care about you and are grateful for everything you've done for them. It was a heavy article to me. I thought it was really powerful.
I think towards the beginning is when they talk about the group chat, and they open it up with a text from Michael Phelps. It says, went to a dark place today. Going to bed now. Just wanted to keep you in the loop. Love you, homie. And, you know, we hear most people can infer what, you know, went to a dark place today meant. There's a spectrum of that, I believe, but assuming that was not a great place for him to be. But I think that's one of those, when your mind goes to that deep, dark place, if you just talk to yourself about it, especially in your head, it just gets darker and darker and deeper and deeper. And as much as we're afraid to share it with somebody else, it does lighten the load just saying it out loud to someone else, similarly to journaling and things like that, where just having someone else know that you're feeling that, you feel, because I think when you're that far down the hole, mentally speaking, you feel completely isolated, completely alone. No one's ever felt this bad before. No one that I know would understand what I'm feeling. And they kind of, he had someone that he was able to reach out to. And it was even, it didn't, I thought the specific example here was interesting, that it wasn't, hey, I'm in a deep, dark place and I think I'm going to hurt myself or whatever. Can you help me? He just told his friend, I went to a dark place today, going to bed now, just wanted to keep you in the loop. Yep. He wasn't necessarily reaching out for help specifically, but just sharing and having that outlet to say it. And then I'm moving on, I think, to me was really powerful, because I think we oftentimes think that we need to go to someone because we need them to tell us what to do and they need us then to fix us. And further down the article, I'll have to find it, but someone replied to someone else that, when you didn't share that with me for the last 15 or 20 years, I didn't get a chance to be your best friend. And I thought that was a really powerful response of, hey, you were afraid to tell me because you were embarrassed or thought I wouldn't understand or whatever, but I'm bummed that you didn't let me be there for you or be your listening ear.
Yeah, it was Jay Glazer with Michael Strahan.
With Michael Strahan. I knew Strahan was involved in that one. But, you know, in this realm of athletes, it's again, somewhere in this article, when they were talking about when you're in the sport and you've got your teammates and you've got your coaches and you've got your staff and you're in this like constant world, not that you don't have the issues, but you've got people around you that are at least in a similar situation as you. You've got your teammates and things like that. And he was saying that when you step out of that world, I think everybody has experienced that who has left the sports world, you kind of feel a lot more isolated. Your natural social group has somewhat disappeared, because you have to be more intentional to keep up with those teammates now rather than like, I see you every day at practice. And so I think that intentionality of being there for one another when your situations are the same, but also being able to reach out and reconnect and have purpose and meaning to be connected to them when other things are happening in your life outside of that is supremely important.
Yeah, that was Andrew Whitworth. He talked about that after he retired. It's just, I think all the things that you're chasing for so long, and you think when you get them, it's just going to be so fulfilling.
Yeah.
And, you know, Sean McVay, he's in this too. He coached a team to the Super Bowl championship, and then, you know, fairly quickly this team was struggling. Well, when your whole identity is wrapped up in those results and whatever, it's NFL is a results league, you know, so
sports in general are results oriented. I mean,
so easy to get lost in that as a person. And I mean, I remember, you know, Bill Parcells talking to the Giants after they won the Super Bowl. He's like, no one can ever take this away from you. It's true. But. And it's just, we talk about this kind of meaning, purpose stuff all the time. If you think that at the end of this, you know, whatever, how long McVay was chasing a Super Bowl title, as from a kid playing to coaching, you know, decades, then he gets it. And you know, then they go like 5-12 or whatever. And holy cow, how do you deal with that? And when everyone knows you and values you throughout society based only on like, well, he wins.
Yeah.
And so then all of a sudden when you're not winning and everybody wants you to be fired, what do you do? And how do you handle that? I can't even imagine. And then like Michael Phelps, you know, like however many 23 gold medals or something. I've read over and over about how often people win a gold medal and sink into depression.
Oh yeah.
And that's because these things don't deliver what we are told they're going to deliver.
And I think too, we've brought this up in that book I'm reading, It Takes What It Takes by Trevor Moad. He talks about, who's the track athlete with the gold shoes and Nike?
Oh, Michael Johnson.
That's what I thought. Michael Johnson. Michael Johnson's talking about how, as an Olympic athlete, you know, you get one chance to perform to get to go to the Olympics every 4 years. And that's just like, if you aren't on that day, then that's the end of that. And I think especially, I think for all athletes, the pressure is just on all the time. But in that situation for the Olympic athletes where it's built up, it's not just built up for a season, like, oh, okay, we got in the Super Bowl over the last X number of months and now we're here. It's like, for the last 3.5 years, I've trained for this one moment. And I can't imagine how, whether you succeed in that moment or whether you fail in that moment, that you don't have this abrupt drop off of the emotion of the preparation for that and all of the schedule and activities and prepping mentally and physically doesn't just come to a screeching halt and feel really, really strange. And I found the sort of quote from my guest, but he says, when you get out of the game, you get away from each other. You kind of live life for those people. There's this relationship and bond that is a daily rhythm to your heart and your soul. You get removed from that. You start to fill it with emptiness or thoughts of loneliness. And especially, I mean, you know, from having played sports, I know from having played sports, but not at a professional level. But those people do, they do become your heartbeat and become part of who you are in a way. And when that gets taken away, whether it's by choice of retirement or by injury or something like that, and that inherent relationship just kind of dissipates. Not only do you feel lonely, but you don't have that outlet to for people who are there with you experiencing the same thing. And so it's, while this article was from an athletic website, like, it's no coincidence that it's a bunch of like freaking high level athletes having these same thoughts, same experiences, but even better, like being there for one another, I think is really, really powerful.
Yeah. And I mean, most of them, for decades, you have this kind of community that supports you and you can depend on. And then when you retire as an athlete, that is gone.
You have to be intentional to keep in touch with them. It's not just built in anymore. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, if they're still playing, well, they're still in it. And,
right.
You know, you're all of a sudden outside.
It's not like you all depart together. It's like, yeah.
But it's the same. Like, if you retire from a job, you know, you'll be older. Then all of a sudden, what? And everything that brought you fulfillment, meaning, purpose is gone. Your community is gone.
Yep.
And how you deal with that is, I don't know. You've got to really be on it. And, you know, we've all struggled at times, you know, with, I mean, I was reading this. I was like, could really identify with some of it, a lot of it. And I think it's beautiful that, one, just like, Glazer and Phelps, they connected over a Subway commercial, whatever. and have maintained and had that relationship grow. But then I thought it was really beautiful that they both agreed, like, let's open this up.
Grow this, yeah.
And continue to add people to our community. 'Cause it's, you know, no one wants to admit that stuff.
Like, no.
You don't want to admit that you're depressed or you're anxious or lost or feel alone. And, you know, you have the guys in this group, you know, they're like the picture of success and toughness and all these things that they're just a facade. And
one, it's, it may not even be a facade, but from like a spectator perspective and a consumer of the sport, that's all that you see. So it's not necessarily that they're putting on a facade per
se. They're not faking it. Right.
But what we see the medals, we see the cheering, we see the success, and we see the losses, but we don't see that the other, every now and then you'll see a press conference where someone breaks down or something like that. But we assume that these people have it all together. They're famous. They're doing Subway commercials. They've got all these brand deals. They're doing all these things. When the reality is they've got this, what do they call it? Battle Buddies chat. I think it's the name of their group chat. That is mandatory for them to like maintain their peace and their sanity. I think it's, you said it's, we don't ever want to admit that we're anxious or depressed. And I think that is such a, like, whether it was ingrained in us as children and to stop crying and suck it up, whatever, or we just feel ashamed of those feelings, keeping it inside just makes it that much worse. I always say, like, you're just digging your dark hole deeper and darker.
Yep.
And colder. It's the center of the earth is cold, right? Hot? No, it's hot. But then why does the dirt get colder as you dig down deeper? Anyway.
It's further away from the sun. Surface temperature is further away from the sun.
Yeah. I had this conversation at the beach this summer. Sorry, I digress.
It's deep.
You said it was going to get deep today.
Get it.
I get it. That was a really great pun. What was I talking about? Digging yourself deeper and deeper. So it's from just a single person experiencing those feelings, it's bad. But also the relationships that you have with people, best friends, marriages, business partnerships, they can't last if you don't share these feelings with the other person. And it feels terrifying to share it and say it. But if the people closest to you that you love the most or that you rely on the most don't really know what's going on with you, and not that those people have the answers and can, you know, fix you, if you will, but just having someone to share and being vulnerable with, hey, this is what I'm going through, actually bonds you deeper than, I think people just fear this judgment or this misunderstanding. And there might be misunderstanding of just like, hey, I didn't realize you're feeling this way, or I would have assumed you felt like X, Y, and Z, not A, B, C. But relationships require vulnerability to share that, because A, we're all freaking human. We all feel these things. And B, that is what a relationship is that emotional connection back and forth and the highs and the lows. I thought that my husband and I were talking recently about, he was like, I just don't feel like I have any fun anymore. You know, we're in the thick of kids and starting a business and work and all these like adult kind of life things. And I thought this was interesting. I asked him, I said, when do you think was the last time you like regularly had fun? And he said when he was playing competitive softball. When we met, he was playing competitive co-ed softball with a lot of ex-college baseball and softball players. And that was something that we did together. I went and supported him. And it was not like first time I went, I just thought we were going to be doing like church league beer drinking softball. And they had jerseys, they had warm-up music. It was a whole thing. But I thought it was interesting that like when he was competing in sport, and he had the community of people that every Tuesday and Thursday they had practice and they would travel to these competitions. Like that was the last time he remembers having fun other than just like playing with our kids and things, something that was just strictly just for him. So I thought that was like in line, obviously, with what we talk about with sports. But I do think that, you know, when you step away from those things that kind of are your realm and are your world and are your connections with people, it just goes to show that freaking connections matter. When you don't have them, shit gets hard.
Yeah, and that's, I think, when you're embarrassed or ashamed that you are struggling, well, being willing to, brave enough, I guess, to open up and share that just deepens those connections. And
we think it's going to pull away from them, but it deepens them.
Yeah, makes the bond stronger. I don't know. That's just, I know growing up as a kid, I get this sense of what being a man is, and it's so incomplete.
Yeah.
And it's never enough.
Yeah.
And then you think that whatever kind of success and whatever work you pursue, you think that's going to do it. And it's never enough.
Yeah.
It's always the next thing and the next thing. And, you know, someone like when you, like McVay coaching a team to a Super Bowl, that just takes every ounce of who you are for so long. And then it's over. Okay. What do you have to do it again?
Like, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's really hard to do it again.
Yeah.
Or
you retire and you lose the chance to do it again. And that's a whole different.
Well, that was Whitworth. I think he retired after the Rams won the Super Bowl, if I'm not mistaken. And he had family, kids, all these things that are really meaningful, and but when so much of who you are is all of a sudden removed, that can, I mean, I'm sorry, like when you're competing like that, and I mean, everything is so mission driven.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden that's all gone and you're just, okay, I'm going to take the kids to school, whatever.
Yeah.
All of them would say that's really cool. I get to do that, but it doesn't replace.
Doesn't replace.
Like what you've spent your whole life doing.
I think that's the hard part too, is it's hard to unwind that feeling of whether it was something that you were raised with of what a man is, or you were a professional athlete, you did something for so long. Trying to unwind, like trying to identify what feels different now, then trying to share your feelings with someone else, and then trying to also like autocorrect those feelings of like, how should I be functioning and checking in? I think this, Johnson said, what I've learned is when you show up for your friends, not just when times are good, but when shit goes sideways, it also allows you to show up for yourself. It's like this alchemy that happens. You begin to become a little bit stronger and you begin to get your emotional calluses and you begin to learn how to deal with things. The check-in, because they said the check-ins are constant. One day earlier this month, Glazer was in a road trip, which meant he was out of his routine. McVay called to make sure he was good. Phelps reached out 3 times the first week. Johnson touched base 2x. And then they talk about that quote of, you know, showing up for your friends. And I do, when you check in with other people, it does. It ends up being a form of self-care, because, hey, if I call you and say, hey, how's it going? Or, hey, you're out of your routine, given this, you know, particular example, you're going to do that for me next time. Or it's going to start a conversation. I'm checking in on you and you're going to share something and I'm going to be like, oh yeah, me too. Like it comes back to connection. But when you have people to just share and do life with, it makes it a little brighter on the dark days.
Well, and that is the whole point of this group. None of them are, you know, trained psychiatrists or whatever, but they are a community of people who are connected in a really meaningful way. And that, you know, buoys everyone involved. And it shows the power of connection. It shows the power of community. And so, I mean, I guess for me, the point of this whole discussion is to encourage any, you know, reach out. And reach out both ways. Just nobody's ever going to tell you, will you stop showing that you care about me?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Ironically, my husband, I think he'll be okay with me sharing this. He went on Instagram a few weeks ago because he's been going through some stuff, and he went on his stories and just said, he kind of said like, hey, man friends, but anyone who has a man in their life close to his age-ish or anybody at all, he was like, check in on your people. Because he said, you know, my generation, wasn't really raised to like process our emotions well. We just sort of like swept things under the rug. Not even just the generation, but men specifically, of like, you know, just push it away. You shouldn't be feeling this and that. And he basically said, check in on your people. And he doesn't have a huge following. He has like 200 people that are mostly just his close friends. And he told me, he was like, the number of people that responded to me and either said, thanks, I needed to hear that, and that prompted me to reach out to somebody, or just you saying that made me feel like you were connecting with me. And I don't think he was going on to necessarily make an impact. He was just sharing his own. And I think that's that vulnerability when you open up to other people, especially if you're someone who other people think has it all together. You're always dressed well. You know, you drive a nice car. Like, people just make these assumptions. You know, you've got a family, you've got great kids, kids are in great school, everybody's healthy. Like, we view this outside spectator version of people's lives and make assumptions. But the reality is everybody has darkness under all that brightness, or maybe there's not brightness. But I think, to his point, just like checking in on your people is so
important. And that was Dwayne Johnson in that, at the end of that article, where his dad had passed away, and he didn't really feel comfortable or know how to express what he was really feeling, and feeling like he had to just keep this image going. Yeah. And so, I mean, that was a, there were so many instances of, you know, people being brave enough to say what they were going through. And, you know, like Dan Quinn, I know he wrote a book with John Gordon after he'd been fired by the Falcons. That was really good. And his parts were really powerful, you know, because he was very open and honest about mistakes he'd made. And, you know, at that point, he hadn't yet landed another head coaching gig. So it's just, I don't know. I thought it was a great article with a lot of heavy truths in it that,
I don't know if this was during our test recording or if this was in the beginning of this, so, but I'll elaborate a little bit. In this, at the end of the article, they talk about Glazer is supposed to have dinner with Strahan. I think that was it.
Right.
And Glazer started basically having a panic attack and had never shared before that he was experiencing this. It says, in the past, he would respond by taking Vicodin and drinking alcohol. He says, I'd rather put my life and job on the line than let anybody know I really had this depression and anxiety. This shame. And he says, but for the first time, he explained to Strahan what was happening. He says, the beast got out of the box. Strahan said, why have you never told me? And he said, dude, I was ashamed. I was ashamed because you and I are so competitive. We're brothers. And Strahan, and I love this. Yes, Strahan said, according to Glazer, but you took away my chance to be your best friend for 30 years. And he said that moment helped him realize people want to listen. And I think to me, I'm getting emotional just listening to that. That's one of those things where it's such a prime example of I was ashamed. I was embarrassed. We're brothers. We're tough. And Strahan's like, Strahan desperately wanted to be soft and emotional with him. Mm-hmm. And neither one of them had any idea what was on both sides. So until you share that with people, even though we all know everybody's dealing with it, you don't have an idea. So yeah. I loved that. That was my favorite part of this article, was that just reminder of you thought that you needed to be tough for me. And meanwhile, all I wanted to be was your friend. What more could you ask for there, you know?
That was really emotional. I don't think we can add anything better to that.
It's just, I think this was a timely article, a emotional heavy article, but again, just such eye-opening, emotionally opening, that anybody could read this and take something away from it.
No doubt. Yeah.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Unbound Performance Podcast.
Your support helps us continue to build our community. If you're enjoying this content, please like, subscribe, and share.